Dixon that year starting football games while Ben was suspended. So they have Ben go 9-3. They have those two manage to get them to 3-1 and survive that early portion of the schedule before Roethlisberger would come back. I'm hard-pressed, though, to find a season that I think he's done a better job in since then than this one. For this reason, this is like the first time in a while. You know, picking Kenny Pickett is a collective, collaborative move. They all kind of had to wear that one. Colbert, Tomlin, Rooney, everybody involved. Bringing back Matt Canada, I think, is a Mike Tomlin thing he had to wear. Doing what he's done so far this year, with the quarterbacks that he's had to do it with, and then, specifically, when things had gotten off to a reasonably good start, probably better than anyone could have imagined, so they're already praising the guy, right? Like, hey, good job, here's Mike Tomlin, just incapable of ever losing more games than he wins because he finds hidden vigorish here to magic dust to sprinkle over his team. They're 4-2. Then I think he makes probably one of the biggest, scrutiny-bringing moves of his career, most heavily scrutinized decisions of his career, does something almost nobody, it seems like, in the court of public opinion wants him to do, and puts Russell Wilson in and looks like he might have unlocked a different level for this team to find the last 9 games. He's making big decisions, taking big risks in terms of the most important position on the field, the one that he has gotten the most maligned as far as his historic inability to handle when he hasn't had Roethlisberger around. And he's reaping the benefits. Like, they look like a legit team. If you go by point differential, which I often do, they're plus 68 right now. Would you like to know how many teams in the AFC have a better point differential than the Steelers at this moment? How many would you guess, Donnie? If I sort this conference by point differential, how many teams are better than plus 68?
I think the Bills and Ravens, definitely. I don't know if I can think of another one. I don't think I would put the Chiefs, because a lot of their wins have been relatively close.
As Starkey would say, wrong. It's just the Bills. Ravens are 20 points behind them, or 35 behind them. Bills at plus 84. Steelers at plus 68. This one's kind of gross. Broncos at plus 53, which just makes me... They got the Panthers on there. They've had a couple. The Spencer Rattler Saints. RIP to Spencer Rattler's career. Our guy Fake John and Robinson's in shambles right now.
I'm going to have to take that shirt to Goodwill.
I know. He knows it's bad right now for old Spency boy. Trust me. The Chiefs are plus 50. Like, if many of your complaints about the guy focused on, okay, doesn't understand how to handle quarterbacks, almost like he prefers to win super ugly at times and like won't run away with games, obviously being rebutted right now. I mean, they had a chance to run away and hide from the Jets. When the Jets opened the door, they did it. They didn't put away the Giants, to be fair. But some of their wins early in the season, I think, are looking more impressive. Like, just kind of handling the Chargers the way that they did with Fields in there, I think that looks better. I can't believe I'm saying this out loud, but handling the Broncos in their building now that Bo Nix, like, they've gotten him to a base level of competence, seems better. Defense stifles Kirk Cousins. That's a good win. I mean, they have racked up. I know they have two frustrating losses. They have racked up, like, a pretty surprising number of quality wins early on there, and now they've beaten two teams in a row and looked better than they have all year doing it. Like, I'd put this in the top 3 or 4 seasons that he's had. So if I say 2019 is still one for me, then all the way back to their second Super Bowl appearance and then the Super Bowl win, I think if he's got a Mount Rushmore of seasons, this one is poised to be on there right now.
2019 was going to be the one that I referenced, because if the question is, can you think of coaching jobs that he has done recently that sort of stack up to what he's doing right now, I still do think, even though that team was 8-5, they end up missing the playoffs because they dropped the final 3 games, I still think him being able to do what he did with that team that was quarterbacked by Duck friggin' Hodges, who is
a human meme.
Yeah, I mean
he's Mr. Laney Wilson. That's what he's known as. Yeah, I think he's happy to be known as that, by the way.
Oh, I don't think happy is even the right word.
Elated.
He'll remind everybody in the world that he's with Laney Wilson. But for him to be able to
if you were Duck Hodges and you were with Laney Wilson, you probably would too. I mean, you probably would too.
Yeah, sure. But I've also never had a chance to play in the National Football League. what he was able to pull off with that team, if they would have gotten to the playoffs, I think he should have really gotten legit coach of the year consideration. If that team would have gotten to the postseason, all they had to do was probably win one more of those games, that final three.
I think if they had specifically one of the games, I forget, there was like one that if they had won it would have done it for them, I think. Some certain other ones would not have, I want to say. But it was a weird situation. But like, yeah, they, if they had won one more, they get in, he would probably have gotten consideration. He shouldn't get, he's not top on my list for coach of the year this year right now. Dan Quinn's got to be up there. I think O'Connell still has to be up there for right now, Don. But it just, it feels like for the first time in a very long time, there are still some of the weird gaffes that people like us point out, like the, why are you challenging a play that isn't challengeable? You're on the committee that decides how these things work. You should know this. There's still the stuff that's always going to be, the answers from him are never going to be what people want to hear. He's still going to talk the same way. But in terms of the actual content of what they are doing, I mean, I think I'm probably underselling it. He made a massive roll of the dice to bench a 4-2 guy, right? I mean, no one had ever done that before, benching a starter who was 4-2. I forget what the actual qualifiers are to make that a never-before thing, but no one had ever done what he was doing right there. For a guy that most people felt like was beyond his prime and was never going to see great football again, that guy has looked way more like his old self than I think any of us thought possible. And like, to do that, you have to have a lot of faith in the guy, and you have to have seen something that you really believe. Like you, and he was doing it kind of on a wing and a prayer, because what Russell Wilson film does he have to go on? Virtually no preseason action. The last time he saw him, he was playing for Denver, and they threw him on the bench. Now, granted, I think that was mainly because there was a personality clash there, but he put himself out there in a way that I don't think he's usually accustomed to doing, and he has reaped the benefits. I would say his ability to guide them through some of those kind of tough slugfest games early, he's very comfortable playing those games. They didn't turn the ball over, generally speaking. That's why they won those games. They did just enough. And then this is where I would give the most credit. And then his willingness to actually let them try to cook and turn it on once he trusted the guy that was under center more. Like, I think that's where he dispelled some of my previously held convictions about him, that he just loves to have his hands at 10-2 on the steering wheel. He's absolutely letting Wilson play freer and put the ball at risk more.
He also, since Roethlisberger retired, has fumbled the quarterback situation here for the last multiple seasons, whether it be through Trubisky, Pickett, Rudolph, the whole fumbling between those three guys, to where, okay, none of those three guys, besides Rudolph at the very end, none of those three guys gave a lot of reason to be backed by the head coach and organization, but they also, Mike Tomlin didn't do them any favors by the way he handled it.
And the Rudolph stuff at the end made him look worse, because it's like, well, you might have been able to do this earlier, and who knows what your season would
look
like.
Yeah, you would have been in the playoffs comfortably, you know, whatever it may be. This time it's actually working out, so I think that's where it catches people by surprise, too. Like, they thought the quarterback was over the hill, and they didn't expect the coach to make the right decision when it came to the quarterback. I think a lot of people thought, well, Mike Tomlin's tried this before. This will backfire, and we'll see that Russell Wilson's no good.
I think most people, quickly to put a capstone on this for now, most people who don't love Tomlin or looked for reasons to like find, you know, to undercut his performance, have said, well, he's always had a Hall of Fame quarterback, so it undercuts what he's done. You know, who could screw that up, right? Here's why this is different this year. They're having success, and yes, they have a Hall of Fame quarterback. The decision to play the Hall of Fame quarterback was his, and it wasn't popular. Like, he didn't inherit anything here. He absolutely put his neck out there on the line for Russell Wilson. And so far, two games in, and I feel really good about what's going to happen later, even though they might have a worse record these last nine games than they did at 6-2 to start this season. He is the reason. He didn't inherit anything. He is the reason that suddenly they look dangerous. And that's why I think he deserves a lot more credit than he's gotten in recent years. I would say it's a top 4 year for him. The Super Bowl year, the other Super Bowl year, 2019, and probably this. And this one has a chance to supersede 2019. You get to the playoffs, you win a game or two, you're in the conference title game, it's immediately on your medal stand if you're Mike Tomlin. And I'm pleasantly surprised, because I think he's shown dimensions as a coach that I didn't think he had. Like, just strictly being willing to let Russell Wilson throw the ball downfield and open up their offense has been pleasantly surprising.
And letting Smith do his thing as well.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, finally admitting the error, although he was so bad and so loyal to Canada, I'm not sure I can really give him too much credit for that, but yes. Fan Text Line's brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. That's 412-928-9370. I'm getting murdered right now for my Freddy Krueger omission in the top five. I'm getting crushed.
People love the guy.
I know. I'm getting crushed for a lot of this, and you are just pummeling me in this power ranking showdown.
I mean, I think you made some savvy,
I made some art house picks, and that's why I'm getting killed for it. Fan Twitter account is at 93.7TheFan, and that's brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them, southhillskia.net. Here's a text you don't want to get from your wife, Donnie. Dude, did you eat all the chicken nuggets? Because when I'm hungry in a pinch, if I just want to heat something up, I eat dino nuggets. No shame in my game. It's the kids' chicken nuggets. I copped to having had about 10 to 12 of them total in the last, like, week, and apparently that is a grave sin for which I will possibly not recover here. We go out right now to the hotline for a chat with our friend. He is the co-host of the Check the Mic podcast, the 33rd team. That is, of course, Steve Palazzolo. Steve, hello. How are you?
Doing great. Can't get my camera to work, but doing well, and can relate to eating all the kids' food all the time. I do that often.
I thought that might be one that you could relate to, and yes, I feel like I am absolutely in the doghouse. It's very funny on my side of things. I see your video, and you are locked in the most like thoughtful look, like you have just really started to consider deeply some question that I've asked you. So I will start here. Horror movie villains. Are you a fan of the slasher, the horror genre? You're Michael Myers, you're Jason Voorhees. No,
not at all.
See, me and Donnie wondered if it would even be possible for you to get intimidated. You're a big man. You're about 6'10", and you'd be looking down at all these clowns while they're walking after you with machetes and stuff. I'd feel in your shoes, just throw a baseball at one of their heads.
Exactly. Yeah, like Randy Johnson. Keep the baseball under the bed just in case. Chuck it at him. Yeah, I'm not afraid of any of them. I'm ready for Christmas movies. I'm ready.
Are you a Halloween candy guy, however?
I enjoy candy, generally. So, yeah.
What is the one you're taking out of the kids' Halloween stashes tonight when you are rooting through?
I think I saw your list yesterday. I like Twix. I like Kit Kats. I like those at the top. Butterfinger at times.
Ooh.
No Mounds or Almond Joys. Those got tossed as a kid.
I think what I saw somebody say was they're getting the peanut butter cups and grabbing them. Mounds, the kids can have those. They can learn to like Mounds and Almond Joy,
yes.
Which I agree with.
Daddy tax, you got to teach all that stuff.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I agree with you. That's like a healthy way to do it. Although I think if I go and say dad tax tonight, my eldest will just start screaming at me and not really want to deal with that. Mike Tomlin. Would you say this is one of the best coaching jobs he's done this year in a pretty long time, given where he has the Steelers at and given what the quarterback situation was coming into the year?
Oh, yeah. In the offensive line, like all the turnover that they've had there. I mean, I think it's a great job by Tomlin. I can't remember if I said this on your show weeks ago, but I'm starting to rethink how we evaluate coaches almost completely. I think we've just learned so much about how important the quarterback is to the coach and the perception. And we've only got a handful of coaches historically who elevate multiple quarterbacks. And so, you know, Tomlin in this situation with like one of the cheapest QB rooms in the NFL, if not the cheapest, going 4-2 with Fields, going 2-0 after making the move to Russ, elevating the ceiling of the offense. I think he's done a great job so far.
What was your opinion of Russ in this most recent game against the Giants? It looked to me, at least, and I won't try to lead the witness too much, but I thought it was a markedly better game in terms of just what he did on his own than what he did against the Jets.
I completely agree. I mean, we didn't get to chat last week. I hated some of the overreaction to George Pickens making great plays on Sunday Night Football, right? I mean, it was an underthrow off of a corner that bounces five times. It was, to me, the Sunday Night Football game was Will Russ giving George Pickens a chance to make special plays, which he did. This game was Russ hitting some pinpoint deep balls, the touchdown to Calvin Austin. The second one to Pickens was just outstanding. I thought Russ played a much cleaner game. So if there was hype coming out of, either of the games, to me, it was much more this game against the Giants than the first one against the Jets.
Does it look sustainable with Russ from what you're seeing? Like, just the way they're, what they're asking him to do, does that look like something that, that he can keep doing?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, again, it doesn't mean you're going to hit, you know, three or four deep balls every single game, but I think he's playing pretty clean. He is giving the receivers chances to make plays. It does feel like you're seeing a little bit more from Darnell Washington, Calvin Austin, Van Jefferson. You're seeing some of those guys have the opportunity to be elevated. Love the way Najee Harris is running, you know, probably unrelated, but maybe it is. So yeah, I'm describing it as raising the ceiling of the offense. I thought Justin Fields did well relative to really low expectations. I think Russ has raised the ceiling so they can have those games where they put up 30+.
Steve Palazzolo, 33rd team co-host of the Check the Mic podcast. Check that out at the 33rd team. Where do you slot this team right this second in the AFC hierarchy and pecking order?
Oh, man. I mean, I still think the Ravens are a better team. I know that's probably not going to go over well here, but and they haven't played each other yet, and you know, maybe they end up splitting the series. I think the Ravens are still a better team. The Chiefs, of course, are the team to beat. But I don't know who else. I mean, it's still, to me, it's still the Chiefs, Ravens, and Bills as the best teams. But the Steelers are sitting there competing with teams that they beat. You know, teams like the Chargers, teams that they can beat, like the Broncos. I think Houston tonight, you know, maybe they're four. Steelers at five in the AFC. I still like Houston, even though they've won ugly this year, though.
Based on what you've seen through two games, I know we've had this common discussion over the last couple of years where they've dragged their carcass into the playoffs. And we've all kind of just rolled our eyes and said, no way can they make noise. Just given what they've gotten from Wilson through two games, like, does this version of this team look like a better one that can actually win a playoff game, maybe more than that, if they get the right matchups?
Yeah, I think this is their best team since the COVID year, back when we said they were an overrated, the worst 11-0 team in history.
Which they were.
Right? They do have the best opportunity. If they stay healthy, they get Nick Herbig back, so you get the three-headed edge rush monster, you get the interior pass rush with Cam Hayward and Keanu Benton. I really like the way it's built, the team. And again, I don't think Russ is back to top five, top eight caliber Russ, but he definitely looks a little better than he did in Denver. So I think that's huge. Offensive line, you know, if they can play a little bit more consistent, especially on the right side, I think they have a chance to do some damage. Not saying they're winning the Super Bowl, but damage can be done with the Steelers team.
Do they need a wide receiver from outside the organization to do that damage? Do they still need to trade for one?
I'm always of that mind for depth, you know, because you can't trade after next Tuesday. If you have injuries, you don't have that opportunity for depth and for game plan purposes, right? I know that, you know, Darius Slayton name was thrown out there. Mm-hmm. You could fit a Darius Slayton into this offense without taking away you know, the depth. It just adds to the depth, right? You know, it puts a little less pressure on a Van Jefferson, on a Calvin Austin. So yeah, I'm all about adding more bodies to the wide receiver room.
Any reason for concern, in your opinion, about their run defense, which has gotten gashed pretty good a couple games in a row now?
Yeah, I mean, look, anytime you have a weakness, you know, it's like playing whack-a-mole. I think their pass rush is better than it's been this year because of the consistency. I think they've sacrificed run defense for a guy like Benton, who's a little less consistent against the run. So yeah, I think it's a concern, but I think stopping the run often is just schematic. Hey, let's put eight guys in the box and you can stop it if you need to. So less concerned about that than than if it was an issue with the pass game.
How close is TJ Watt to winning defensive player of the year again since Aiden Hutchinson's done for the season?
It's just funny. I mean, I know the old arguments were, hey, he has the most sacks, he has to be the guy. He doesn't have the most sacks this year, but certainly has the impact plays. I'm closer to having TJ Watt as the defensive player of the year this year because I think, again, the impact plays when he does it. I remember the forced fumble at the goal line against the Raiders. Like, his run defense, I think, has been elevated to a point where his all-around game is better than it's been in previous years. So I think he's more in the mix this year maybe than he was, you know, last year or the year before.
He's Steve Palazzolo, co-host of the Check the Mic podcast over at the 33rd team with Sam Monson. And he will be watching It's a Wonderful Life tonight once all the trick-or-treating has ended.
They have it in color now. Absolutely. I'm ready.
Thank you, Steve. Talk again soon. It's that time again. Time for a Donald football debrief. Donnie?
The debrief, October 31, 2024. A little clip to kick us off here, Malzi.
Second and six. Roethlisberger punts. Throws long for Burris, and Burris has it! Touchdown, Steelers!
Do you know the game?
Yep, I do, actually. That is the game where they broke the Patriots' regular season winning streak, or just overall winning streak. Roethlisberger's real coming out party as a force. 34-20, Deshae pick six of Brady, just jumped a route. Did they score another defensive touchdown, or did they just force a fumble, I think, that was a big play?
They forced three Brady turnovers. Townsend had the pick six. Porter had three sacks. But, yeah, they had another interception in there, a fumble lost from Brady that I think was a Porter, Kimo von Olhoff and combo.
Mm-hmm.
October 31st, 2004, Halloween, 20 years ago.
Heady times to be at Penn State as a Pittsburgh fan in a sea of some Patriots fans and a lot of Eagles fans. The next week, they would just bury Philadelphia 27-3. Hines was doing the bird flapping. They took down two unbeaten teams in back-to-back weeks, which I don't think that late in the season had ever been done before. A team just doing both of the dirty work there. That was the first time you saw cracks with Brady against the Steelers. I mean, he owned them otherwise. I remember to start the 2002 season, so that was not even a good Patriots team. They just went 9-7, but Brady like threw it something like 25 straight times against them that game. It just felt like he was going to have one over on them all the time. That game definitely felt like it put Ben on the map, because it was like, all right, this guy's a nice story. Like, he's come in, he's won some football games. Like, he looks like he's going to be good for a long time, but they're still slow rolling him. They're still playing this very close to the vest and carefully. And that, I don't remember him having insane numbers, but I do remember watching that game thinking they were letting him actually try to make plays.
18 of 24 for 196, two touchdowns, no picks.
Yeah, that's a pretty good game.
He had so many of those, like, just efficient games early in his career, like where games where he would not have huge yardage numbers, but it would be something like that.
He would have crazy yards per completion numbers and yards per attempt, because he would be throwing very few passes, but he'd complete almost all of them, it felt like. What is that, 10 yards per completion there, and it's got to be close to 8 yards per attempt.
The run game, just a force in that one as well. Deuce Staley, 25 for 125, ooh, and then Bettis, 15 for 65 and a touchdown.
One of my random takes is if Deuce Staley hadn't gotten hurt so much, he would have actually been great here. I mean, because every time he played, it felt like he was actually quite good. But then his hamstrings were like on tripwires waiting to be pulled. Yeah, I remember that one pretty vividly. I remember that one because I was up in State College like, hey, awesome, the Steelers are actually like, hey, cool, they're doing cool stuff. And then it got to a fever pitch the next week, though, when they just smoked the Eagles. That one was even more memorable because they just flat buried them in that game.
And then the two teams that they just beat in back-to-back weeks go on to play in the Super Bowl that year.
Dude,
the Steelers beat them. Now, the Patriots obviously getting redemption when it mattered most.
That was the worst game the Patriots played all year, I would say, because they only lost one other time, and it was to the Dolphins, which they always would go down there. They'd go down to Miami and inexplicably
lose. That was
lose.
That, I think that's a pretty notable Monday night game. I think they lost 29-28. Was it that game?
Yeah. They were up 28-17 with 4 minutes left. The Dolphins scored, I think got an onside kick or had three timeouts still. And Darius Thompson, who is not a quarterback, threw the winning touchdown. No, he caught the winning touchdown. It looked like he said through it. A.J. Feely beat him. But, like, I say it's the worst game the Patriots played because in no other game all year were they outclassed as thoroughly as they were in that one. Steelers outgained them by almost 200 yards, won the turnover battle plus four. The Patriots had 5 rushing yards that game. 5. The next week, what the Steelers did to the Eagles just almost defies belief. They actually turned it over twice, Eagles only once. Philly had 113 yards of offense, 90 passing yards, and 23 rushing yards. I mean, they just absolutely blitzed those two teams badly. Ward especially in that Eagles game. And then I just remember it was the rare time you'd watch those games and go, wow, they are really just going to absolutely slaughter these guys.
That Eagles one, that was the first time we saw the drama start between T.O. and McNabb. Walking away from him on the sideline.
Yeah, You're right.
Yeah, that was the beginning of the end of the Terrell Owens era in Philly.
What did T.O. expect? He still got 13 targets that game. He's probably mad because McNabb was throwing the ball at his feet.
The Pats only ran the football 6 times in that game for 5 yards. Kevin Falk, 5 for 4. Cedric Cobbs, 1 rush, 1 yard.
Here's another one. Ben against the Eagles right after that. You said it, just another classic efficient game. Now, he did have both the turnovers. He threw a pick and he lost a fumble, but 11 for 18, 183, and 2 touchdowns. Passer rating was 109. They would put him in situations where he was either throwing, I would say, somewhat safe deep balls, or he would just get in those modes where he would scramble around, and then the play would always be a massive one because everyone would be out of position. I feel like he always got a ton of run after catch in those games.
That's also why his rookie year doesn't get a lot of love, I think, from a national view. Like, we all love it here, and he did something that we still have yet to see, even with some of the great young quarterbacks that enter the league. We haven't seen a guy win his first 14 games in the league. But people downplay it because, oh, well, look how easy it was around him. They do have to remember, people should remember, when Roethlisberger was called upon in some big moments as a rookie, he more often than not made the play.
I think the reason his rookie year doesn't get some of the credit that the rest of it gets, or that, like, maybe people here felt it should get, was, and this is just my thought watching it, I did feel like it was obvious, if you were watching pretty closely, that he started to play more poorly towards the end of the year. Like, teams, I wouldn't say figured him out, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, the Jets game, they had no business winning.
Yeah, the playoff game, they had no business winning, but, like, I'm looking down the stretch of the season. The Jets game that they played in the regular season where they won by 11, 9 of 19, 144 yards, no touchdowns, 2 picks. Giants game that next week, I know his numbers don't look bad, but they weren't good. 18 of 28, 316, 1 touchdown, 2 picks. And then he did play well against Baltimore in the season finale, but, like, the line of demarcation is actually that Philly game. So after that, bad game against Cleveland, but they win convincingly. Good game against Cincy, they win a close one. 9 of 20 for 131 and nothing against Washington. They win that game 16-7. Basically a perfect rating against Jacksonville. 14 of 17, 221 and 2.
Oh, that was the Sunday Night Football one. He let him down the field.
Yep. But then bad against the Jets, mediocre against the Giants, I would say average, and then good against Baltimore. Then he didn't play when they beat the Bills with Tommy Maddox.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is, he had that run of 5 games, starting with the first Cincy game and ending with the Philly game, where he was just awesome. But then there were some of those warts starting to show later in the year. Like, there was a book that was out on him. Obviously not a very good one, because he's going to go to the Hall of Fame, but that was my recollection of that season.
And then he had what? He had 3 picks in the AFC title game against New England.
The AFC title game was, I mean, both of his playoff games were a mess. 17 of 30, 181. 1 touchdown, 2 picks against the Jets. And then he went 14 of 24, 226, 2 touchdowns, 3 picks against New England, including the ridiculously long pick 6 by Rodney Harrison.
Yeah, that's the one I remember.
Well, that was like the kill shot, too, because they're down 17-3 when it happens. And if he sends him in for a touchdown there near the end of the first half, you can, like, squint and say maybe they get back in this thing. But down 24-3, it was obvious they were outclassed at that point. And the Patriots were not shy about pouring it on either. All right, Donnie, good debrief. I got to shout out our guy Nate. Nate on Twitter, Nate Store on Twitter. He told us yesterday, when he heard me hacking up a lung, he made it known that he had ordered off of Amazon a bunch of cough drops. And he, I think, had heard us talking about the candy-style ones, these Halls Breezers, I guess. Pony, if he was here, would say, what, those Halls Brazzers? These Halls Breezers, they're like creamy strawberry cough drops. Their throat, they're like more for like soothing. Very good. He sent us an economy-sized bag for me. That's great listening. Thank you, Nate. The only reason I mean, I know this because he said he was going to do it. I had to go out and sign for something in the hall. They had like the delivery guy for Amazon be like, hey, he needs to sign for this. I had to sign for a thing of cough drops.
Yeah, I remember from my time, I mean, you guys know I had a bunch of odd jobs like during COVID, and then I was working part-time here before I got the little bump up. I oddly remember, like, if you go to like CVS or Rite Aid and you try to do the self-checkout with those, you need to, like, show somebody your ID, even if it's a cough drop.
I know for a while, like, you couldn't buy decongestants because they thought you were making meth with, like, Sudafed. A lot of little Walter Whites out there.
Eisenberg.
I still have to watch the rest of that show. I watched the first season. I liked it. And then, you know me, I'm like, I'm a serial offender in this department. I just stop watching.
I'm telling you, Chris. It's one of the greats.
I don't have time. And then when I have like time to decompress at night, I just want to shut my brain off completely. Like, I don't want to think. I don't want to do anything. I'll tell you what, man. I'm going to have to start making a lot of soups, too. It's going to have to become soup season. I know it's 80 degrees out today, but I think it's going to get cold. If this throat condition stays bad any longer here, it's going to have to be soup season. And I do have this up. It's going to be up on the Saloni's Instagram page. I have Mulsey's wedding soup that's going to post. The recipe pairs nicely with a little Saloni's bread. My friends over there, they're posting Mulsey recipes, little tailgaters. You like wedding soup? You a wedding soup guy? Because that's going to be this month. And then I think there's a chicken chili in the works for next month.
Now, that piques my interest a little
bit. Wait, but wedding soup doesn't? I make the meatballs and everything.
I think it's fine. It's not my favorite.
I'm a fan of a good brothy soup. I'm a big fan of soup in general, though. I think, like, if you were going to say food groups to me or, like, anything I can toss in a pot and make basically all at once, big fan of it. So that'll be on the Saloni's Instagram feed. I think it should be up there, hopefully, by the end of the day today, the Mulsey wedding soup recipe. And then you get a little Saloni's bread. Get after it, you know? That's what you got to do.